Hi, this is Daniel Jalkut.
And this is Manton Reese.
And this is Core Intuition, filling the hours of the day. Well, Manton, what a difference a week makes. We were stuck in our pathetic lion lives. Are you all updated to the hot mountain lion 10.8?
I am updated. I'm still running the last GM seed, which I think is identical to the release build. I've been running for a couple of weeks, and it's good. It's a good release. You can nitpick different things about it, but overall, I think it's a solid release, and I'm super impressed that Apple was able to turn it around so quickly.
Yeah, I've been happy with it for a few months, actually, running the pre-releases.
Mm-hmm.
There are a few little bugs that I was frankly hoping that our GM seed really was just a seed, that they would be fixed, but... just kind of annoying. This I blogged about it, but there's this networking crash where if you have certain proxy settings set up, then you will crash using Mars Edit or thankfully other apps too. But
thankfully for you, but not for the general
exactly.
User. I read that, and actually I should go test to make sure that doesn't affect any of my apps. I haven't heard any reports, but.
Yeah, the number of people it affects is relatively small because, most people don't have this kind of like automatic proxy configuration stuff turned on. But if your customers are, set up to like work with a certain like company or school network that uses this kind of thing.
Right.
Or what I've discovered is some of the customers who are affected by this, they've just had their Mac or their home directory migrated across Macs for so many years that maybe they like 5 years ago they worked at a company where they said turn on this automatic proxy detection, and then I think that setting is fairly innocuous. If it doesn't find a proxy, it just doesn't set one. So but just having it on, even if you don't even if it's not actually setting you up with a proxy, is enough to make this crash happen. So I suspect if you turn on this setting and you go do anything with your app on the net, you might see a crash. So it seems pretty easy to get it to happen.
Yeah, that seems like something that's worth testing. One of the problems I have in ClipStart is, so it's similar to Marzit in some ways, and then I support uploading to multiple services, Flickr, Vimeo, YouTube, whatever. And unfortunately, each one of those has very different networking code right now. I've slowly, all the new code I write is using this little kind of mini framework of, that I came up with, but a lot of the old code still uses other things. And, so it's a little bit of a mess. I wouldn't be surprised if upload is broken in some things and not others, just because it's not quite consistent across the different implementations in my app.
Yeah. This is the kind of thing you don't know how widespread the problem is for a number of reasons. First of which is, do people actually use your app every day? Like a lot of people use Mars Edit, maybe. A lot of people do use it every day, but then there's like this whole other class of users who maybe just uses it every few weeks when they decide they want to blog something.
Right.
So these people have to first install Mountain Lion and then decide to blog something, try it, and then inevitably it's like, oh, then they crash. And unfortunately, the worst part about this is my crash reporter itself is also vulnerable to the crash. So I don't quite know how I'm getting any crash reports because as far as I can tell, the crash reporter crashes every time it tries to report the crash.
Oh, man.
And
I hate that.
But there must be some lucky scenarios where it gets through, because I'm getting a few crash reports. But this is the kind of thing. I recently started taking advantage of a feature in my crash reporter. When it submits a crash report to Red Sweater, the server side PHP crash reporter like agent has the ability to return a value to the app saying, oh, I know what this crash is, so display this message to the user. So I was so excited here because I could say, dear user, I know exactly why you're crashing. This is a proxy setting. Go to this web page. I'll tell you what to do. In this case, of course, most of the time they're not getting that far. So a little bit annoying, but I'm hopeful that Apple will fix this one up.
Yeah, let's hope so. Sounds like there's a couple things they can clean up. So I wanted to ask you too about the, you released a little Safari extension for 10.8. Safari removed the RSS button. They removed a bunch of different things in these apps as they're sort of streamlining into smaller apps. And I guess maybe it's a stretch to say this is part of it, but you know, like notes aren't in Mail anymore. They're in their own app. Safari is likewise kind of slimmed down. There's no RSS stuff in it anymore. They assume that you're going to use other apps for that. So you built this little extension. How did that go? I mean, you built it like, I guess, a couple months ago, and then just when Mountain Lion came out, you released it.
Yeah, I got personally annoyed as a Safari 6 beta tester, you know, as the, you know, installing the pre-releases. I was personally annoyed that that button was gone. It was kind of funny. I was sort of obeying the letter of the NDA by not mentioning exactly why I was building this extension, but I was tweeting about it and saying, oh, I got this great new, I decided to build an extension for Safari, and what it does is it lets you click on a button and subscribe to the feed. And everyone's like, you can do that right in the app.
I just
decided I wanted to do this for some reason. So, you know, a few people who were also beta testing were like excited at the time and downloaded it and installed it, and I just sort of lost interest in it. And though it was the kind of thing when I was doing it, I was like, oh, you know, I should remember to release this again when Mountain Lion comes out, because right now nobody cares about this, but everybody who loves those, that RSS button, is going to be just dying for this. And so I had this like vague plan, like, oh, I'll finish up, I'll fix the bugs, I'll, you know, there were little things I had left out of the extension, like even the ability to auto update, because, you know, this whole thing has been a learning experience for me about how to make even the simplest Safari extension. And so anything that I didn't need to do to scratch my own itch, I just put off. And one of those things was you just put this little URL, basically like a Safari style, you know, manifest URL to let Safari know whether you have a new version available. Anyways, yeah, so I released this thing, and I guess I shouldn't be too surprised, but it was just nuts. It was like as many links and like as much buzz as, you know, like Mars Edit 3 coming out. It was just,
oh, wow.
Yeah, it was.
You should have charged $5 for this thing.
I know. Well, it was like, it was everywhere. It was on, you know, all the major, the Mac World, the Ars Technica, the unofficial Apple weblog, and then Mac Stories, all these big, you know, blogging sites. And then there was just, it's actually still going now. It's like, it's been on Cult of Mac. It's been on Lifehacker. It just keeps going. And it's like, the solution that people know to recommend.
That's awesome.
And this is the kind of thing that I try to remind myself of when I'm working on this stuff that I'm just going to give away, right? It's like, why am I working on this stuff? I'm just going to give it away. Obviously, there's a certain element of just feeling good about being able to share and help solve problems for people. But this is one of those things. It's a lot like the blogging itself. Manton, like you never know how much value like a blog post is going to bring you, or just building up the reputation of your blog.
Yeah,
I don't know how much more money I've made this week because of this. There was a couple things, this extension, and then, you know, I blogged about like that networking bug, and it's sort of just been like a good amount of traffic on my blog. And
yeah,
I would say there have been, you know, hundreds of dollars of extra sales, if I had to guess.
Nice.
I'm not very good at putting together all the you know, the whys, and, you know, making like a totally confident assessment that it's because of this blog post or this extension that I sold more stuff this week. But
yeah,
you know, it could just be, oh, a lot of people were looking for new software because 10.8's out. But
do you track refers up to sale?
No,
somehow.
No. I'm terrible.
I did that actually a couple years ago, and then as I got caught up into App Store stuff and working on Tweet Library, where you have no, you know, visibility really into anything on the App Store, I kind of forgot I had it. But now that I'm selling Clipstart direct again, I really should go back and check it, because I do, when a hit comes in, I do I set a cookie on the refer if it's not set yet.
Yeah.
And then when they go and they check out and go through the PayPal process, and I then log that in the database so I know where they came from. It's interesting. But yeah, I haven't even looked. Until you mentioned just now, or until I thought of it when I was listening to you talk, I had completely forgotten that I was tracking that. But it seems like that would be useful. So you could say, like, that Lifehacker post, you know, led to, you know, a handful of Mars Edit sales or whatever.
I've been putting that off for years, and it really is as simple as you describe, isn't it? It's just, is there a cookie?
Mm-hmm.
If not, set one.
Set it. Yep.
And then you know what the first referrer for this person, for this browser at least,
right,
was to your site. And then you say, at sale time, is there a cookie? If so, credit that source as the origin of this sale.
Yeah. And it's literally, I would be surprised if I wrote more than 20 lines of code.
I just have to do this. It's just pathetic. And you know, Manton, one of the reasons I don't do a lot of, like Google ads and stuff like that is precisely because I don't want to just throw money at this, Google ads when I don't know that it's converting. Right. And that's the kind of thing that would be easy to measure. So, it's just one of those mental blocks. It's one of those things where, you know, I bet a lot of people feel this way. Like if they're doing iOS development, they feel like there's just so much to learn to get into Mac development and vice versa. And I felt that way a lot over the years about anything vaguely web related. Like, you know, sure, I can write an app on the Mac, but writing a web page, that's terrible. I'd have to, you know, it's not that hard. It's just you have to learn a few new things. And the whole idea, you know, when I started doing this, the indie software stuff, I didn't even know how a cookie worked, you know?
Right.
So it's all just a gradual progression, learn a little bit more. But I do think being able to track the source of some of this stuff would be interesting because, you know, hearkening back to last week's whining about Tumblr, I don't frankly know whether, you know, to bring everybody up to date, Mars Edit unfortunately still does not work with Tumblr. They have not fixed anything on their end, and I have been periodically trying to, you know, make progress on that, but admittedly have taken out some time to do things like I updated this extension so it has the update ability in it. Because when I realized like all these sites are linking to it, I was like, oh no, I'm going to get all these people installing 1.0 beta 2 of my Safari extension, and then they're going to be stuck on that forever, right? So I spent some time working on that, and I took time away from working on Tumblr support. It's not obvious to me whether I would, which was the better business decision to focus on. This free thing I'm going to give away, or investing time into supporting a blog system that has made it painfully clear they care nothing for my support of their system, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm going to go off on a rant here again if I'm not careful.
Without even tracking it, though, I can tell you that you probably made the right choice, because if you had fixed the Tumblr bugs, that would have been great. And that's, you probably want to do that at some point for your customers. But unless some websites covered that bug fix as a major event,
right,
you wouldn't have a spike in sales from that. And you did have more sales from all the extra traffic.
That's right. That's so interesting. I think about that sometimes when I take some time out to do a big blog post about anything. You know, if there's a chance it's going to get, that's what's so funny, is that if there's a chance it's going to get enough attention and enough traffic that it introduces enough new people to my products, then it's actually more valuable to blog about something completely unrelated to Mars Edit than it is to, say, add a feature to Mars Edit, which is kind of crazy. But anyway, it's a good argument to keep blogging. And I sometimes have to remind myself that, you know, I'm on Twitter, just blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, frankly, the Twitter stuff, it helps your, you know, notoriety, and it increases your sort of, your contacts network and your sort of the sphere maybe of your influence. But tweets don't usually go like viral in a way that it actually links back to your stuff. They're so small, they can be passed along as complete packages. You know, you don't say, oh, you should really check out this tweet. You know, you should really, you just repeat it. You retweet it. You quote it verbatim. You don't say, go check out this tweet, and maybe while you're there, you'll see some products and stuff you might want to buy, you know.
The only time that the tweets make a huge difference is if, you know, someone retweets your tweet and then it somehow gets retweeted by someone who has a lot of followers that have like no overlap whatsoever with your followers.
That's true. Yeah.
So it exposes it to like, you know, tons of people that would not have seen it otherwise. Usually things get retweeted and favored and whatever, but it's kind of stays a little bit around the basic circle of people that are interested in your kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. There's a website called tweetreach.com. That's really cool. These guys did it. Actually, they were from Austin, started this company. And they got a bunch of people now too. I think they're doing really well, but it like measures this effect of like when people retweet and it kind of, it spreads, like, how do you know, how far the tweet goes? Kind of interesting that there's like a whole, there's like business
interesting.
Built yeah. up around this idea of retweeting. All right. This episode this week is sponsored again by iDeveloper TV. Scotty and the folks at iDeveloper TV would like us to tell you about their new video training course, Blocks in Objective-C. If you're one of those people who haven't gotten around to looking at blocks yet or have been put off using them because of their strange C-style syntax, you should check this new short course out at iDeveloper.tv/coreint3, where you can also get a 25% discount off the normal price of $19 using coupon code COREINT.
All right. Well, thanks, Scotty. Yes, thanks again. This kind of speaks to me because blocks, as much as I'm excited by them and as much as I see their power and occasionally have used a block already in my apps to really make something easier to program, what did he say in the ad, put off using them because of, not because of their C style syntax per se, but there's other stuff that goes into this, like, the memory management issues that people have run into. Like, you can end up with memory retain cycles because of the way that blocks automatically retain stuff. And, you know, I just, I think it makes sense to have something that just zeroes in on this as an issue, blocks, and, you know, Objective-C, and we want to use them, but, what are the issues? And it sounds like that's what Scotty's put together here.
Yeah. Sounds great. For me, it was always this new thing that I can't use this yet. It looks great, but it, you know, requires later versions of iOS or macOS or Xcode. And then all of a sudden one day I realized, wait a minute, you know, I do require, minimum requirement is fine for using this stuff.
Right. You have no excuse.
Yeah. But it seemed at first when Apple introduced it that it was this future new thing you couldn't use yet. But so I'm finally slowly getting into it. And yeah, this sounds great.
Cool. Yeah. And the 25% discount, I guess, brings the price down to less than $15 with that COREINT coupon code. Thanks again, Scotty.
And that's iDeveloper.tv/COREINT3.
Okay, well, moving on to listener Q&A this week. As a reminder to everybody out there, if you have questions you'd like us to talk about, or even just, you know, talking points, ideas for conversation, let us know. This week we have a question from Paul Schifferer, who asked on our Glassboard channel that he would love to hear how we manage and balance our time for active development, research, administrivia, etc. Especially interested in the difference between my full-time approach and Manton's part-time with his full-time job at the same time. So I guess, Manton, what comes to mind for you as far as this time management? I guess it really is for me just kind of like, how do I split up the day to handle all the red sweater things I need to do? For you, it's even more challenging than that because you've got to put full-time dedication into your day job. And then how do you find the time to do your indie stuff?
Yeah, great question. It's hard. It's very difficult. There's always too much to do. And, I don't know, last few years, probably not enough sleep is involved in this too. But I try to put as much time into actually coding things that I'm going to ship and that are going to make an immediate difference in something. So I try not to waste a lot of time. Like when I am coding and I'm working on this stuff, whether it's at midnight or on the weekend or whenever it is, I try to make sure it counts. So I'm very focused. I'm doing something, writing as little code as possible to make the thing work and actually get it to ship. And so I think part of how I've been able to balance this stuff is just stay focused when I am working on this stuff so that make every minute count so that it actually gets out into customers' hands somehow. But the second part of that, right, is what he asks about research and administration and everything. And that, yeah, it's hard. I mean, sometimes you don't know if you're going to have to get sidetracked on something that isn't directly related to coding and building the product. And lately, for me, I mean, I've got a bunch of sysadmin stuff that I'm doing since I have so many web projects now, it seems like, with TweetMarker Plus and another new project I just started that I'll talk about later at some point. Half the time is not coding. Half the time is SSH'd into EC2 instances and managing processes and, you know, dealing with memory and databases and all that kind of stuff. So that is a part that I would love to be able to get out of the business of doing somehow. But right now my time is still split a lot between that and the coding, and I don't have a system of managing it. It's just, I try to do whatever the most important thing is right now.
This is probably one of my worst skills, managing time and being sort of accountable to schedules and planning and all that stuff. One of the things I love and just embrace, perhaps to a fault, about being indie, and the fact that I am full time indie means that I can do whatever I see fit for the duration of a workday, as it relates to my business. And it's one of those things where it's kind of like, at what point does the lack of constraints and structure become less of a blessing and more of a curse? Because I certainly remember, you know, having my, my full-time job, and I would carve out little bits of time here and there to work on stuff. I remember one year I spent like the entire Christmas, New Year's holiday break just like hammering away on Red Sweater stuff. And it was just like so indulgent to be able to work on that full time.
Mm-hmm.
And then these days it just seems like, you know, no number of hours in a day would be enough to handle everything.
Yeah.
And part of that is just you have a certain amount of success, and the success costs something to maintain. So, for example, I spend a good amount of time every day doing customer support. When I first started out, I didn't have any customers. So I spent 0 hours a day supporting my 0 customers. And that's just one of those things you take with the, you know, with the success, you take with it certain other obligations. You know, this Tumblr thing I was whining about last week is a good example too. It's an example where, because I've been successful enough to have a bunch of customers who use Tumblr with Mars Edit, I have now this new obligation, this possible time suck that can swoop in at any time. Because I decided to support Apple's platforms and I support iOS and Mac stuff in various capacities, they're another example where all of your own personal planning can go out the window when Apple says Mountain Lion just came out, and if you're not compatible with it, you better get your apps into order, or you know, we're going to make you sandbox your apps. That's another thing where we spend a lot of time on things that are decided sort of outside of our own habits. Like I wonder, Manson, like, to compare with another creative profession that requires a long-term commitment and lots of planning and structuring, a novelist, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They have like an editor, somebody who might push back on what they're doing, but they don't have people saying, I don't think they have people saying things like, we're going to have to ask you to change all of your second person narrative to third person narrative because there's been a new commandment from up high, and we're not allowing that anymore. And in the new HarperCollins sandbox, there will only be third party dialogue, or, you know, third person dialogue.
Right. Yeah.
I'm sure I'm diminishing the challenges of a novelist here, but just on some very high level basis, we suffer some unexpected scheduling setbacks, I think, more than some professions do.
Yeah.
Going back to what I was saying, I'm not very good at this, but I wanted to mention that I'm actually looking into this book now, The Power of Habits.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of interesting because it suggests that so much of human behavior is based in habits, and it makes sense. You know, I believe it. But what's interesting about this book is it talks about the idea of being able to replace some of those habits. The idea being, if you can replace like a habit that's not working well for you, scheduling wise or timing wise or success wise, for that matter, with one that does, then once you get the habit replaced, you're like on autopilot. So, for example, I have a great habit of responding to customer support email, right? Frankly, it's just a habit at this point. Like I see support email, I need to get it out, I handle it.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it be great if I had a habit of shipping iOS software?
Right.
So, I don't know. It's something managing the time. I feel like we haven't concretely answered this, probably because each of us just has sort of an ad hoc approach see what we can get done and try to constantly prioritize what's the most important thing today. And even when I know what the most important thing is today, sometimes I indulge myself in working on stuff that's not the most important thing. And that's one of those kind of guilty pleasures of being indie, is I'll say, you know what, today I'm just going to write a blog post, or, you know, I'm going to go look into, and I have this problem of, it's kind of an ADD thing, I think, where it's like, if I start getting intrigued by some other technology or, you know, interest, I will just allow myself to go down that path sometimes for hours.
But as we talked about earlier on the show, sometimes that pays off. Like you had this detour into Safari Extension Land and actually had a boost in sales. So maybe that's okay as long as you twist it into something that actually benefits the business. And maybe a blog post or something else does that in a small way. But I want to get back to something you were talking about, like there's not enough hours in the day. And of course I feel that, everyone feels that. And something I'm kind of curious about, like, as he says in the question, you know, I've got this full-time job and then I've got the indie stuff, which is basically a second full-time job. And so I have these two full-time jobs.
And a family.
And a family, exactly. I mean, then I got to sleep and I got to, you know, there's a bunch going on. And, you know, a lot of people have this problem of not enough hours in the day. But I'm curious if I ever didn't have two full-time jobs, would I be able to work half as much? I mean, is that possible? Or would I fill the time anyway? And I think that's a real concern with anybody that's doing indie work, is you fill up, no matter how much work you think you have to do, you fill up all this time.
Yeah.
And can you ever get out of that habit? As you were saying about building habits, and can you build a habit about working less and still being able to do what you need for your business? There was a blog post from 37 Signals, I think, recently that was talking about this idea, like people that are working at a startup and like, I'm going to work all night, I'm going to sleep in the office, I'm going to do all this so I can make this work just for the first couple of years. And then I'll be able to relax and like the business is working, I'll be able to work less. And his point was, no, you're never going to be able to work less. If you have a habit right now of working 24 hours a day, you're going to work 24 hours a day the rest of your life. Hmm. And you need to pull back now and build the habit of working only 8 hours a day or whatever, so that as your business is successful, you'll still have that habit instead of waking up 5-10 years later realizing I'm still working at midnight, you know?
Yeah.
And that really resonated with me, because it's, you know, you don't want to work hard and your whole life like that. I mean, at some point you want to scale it back.
Yeah. I'm facing this heavily recently because I feel like I have been at that limit, at that overworking limit for years now. Cause I've kind of been like, it's like the sprinting a marathon feeling where you're just like, I got to keep going, mm-hmm. got to keep going.
Yep.
I beat myself up about it, but, the fact is, it's like, I've been doing this because I really want this red sweater thing to work, you know? And it's like, the fear of it not working just makes me kind of keep going at it. And that's one angle of it. The other angle of it that I find is I have to just have some like honest, like some tough assessment sometimes that I've been doing things the dumb way, you know, like I try to sometimes step back and say, okay, how much time have I spent, say, answering this same support question or a similar support question?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it finally time, you know, if it's been 3 years and I've been answering the same support question the same way, you know, I typed it out separately each time. Then I finally made a text expander macro. Then I finally made a text expander macro that links to a blog post that explains in detail. You know, what day do you just say, I'm going to actually fix the underlying problem there so nobody ever runs into this again? You know, similar to what I was saying earlier about this crash reporter that can automatically tell the customer, you know, what the problem is. All these little things, I'm in a phase now where I'm trying to think about time management, I guess, but more about just the efficiencies of everything I do in the business. And can I squeeze a little bit more efficiency out of this process? I think about it a lot with the programming too. Like how many times have you implemented another feature in a way that's just good enough to get the feature done? And maybe you implement 10 features, but if you would have just hunkered down at feature one and redesigned the way features like this are added, then you could have added 100 features, right? And that's always a question. I think anybody who's a programmer is kind of always looking at the world like this. Like, am I doing this in a way that is efficient enough for... Because I hate programming when it comes down to it. I'd rather,
right.
I'd rather be seeing the program yep. work usually than doing the programming.
Yeah. I reached this point at some point a handful of years ago where I realized I really don't like programming. I don't care about programming languages. I don't care about syntax. I don't like this stuff. What I love is building products and giving them to people and, you know, making people's lives better or whatever. I love building products. Programming, no, I don't care about it.
Yeah. It's like going back to the novelist comparison. It's like a novelist being in love with typing, right?
Right.
Are you in
exactly.
love with typing or are you in love with creating, a piece of art that has like a structural flow and a beauty to it? And yeah, you use the best tools you can get. And sometimes I fear that I'm like one of those. Sometimes I fear that I'm the programmer equivalent of the novelist who still like insists on writing in longhand on a pad of paper. And I'm like always trying to remind myself, like, is there a newer tool? Is there for instance, are blocks,
oh, yeah.
you know, a new tool that I should be using? Should I be going to, you know, Scotty's site and getting this blocks course instead of just kicking back and going, oh, I'm going to just write this the old-fashioned way with callbacks because I'm so comfortable with that.
Right.
And I think that's one of the hardest things for anybody, probably in any profession. But I've seen it, you know, in programming. I've seen it when I've worked in a job, you know, at Apple, for example, with older, you know, more experienced programmers who were nonetheless, like, slow and hesitant to embrace new technologies that would help them. And I don't want to be that guy, you know? So that's time management in a nutshell. Try to keep spotting inefficiencies in your process and in the very tools that you use. I'm talking to myself now, obviously. And and eliminate those inefficiencies and try to update to newer ways of writing things. Use dynamic language features that will help you be more expressive. And that's pretty much... Where I'm aiming.
Great. Well, great question, Paul. Thank you. And good talking to you this week. We'll talk to you again next time, Daniel.
Same to you, Manton. Take care.